Welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion. Criterion is a global leader in assessment solutions, providing software for test development and delivery, as well as test development services for low to high stakes certification programs.
All right, Jeremy, welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Arbaz. Thanks. Great to be here.
And as always, I'm your co-host, Arbaz, with our Chief Revenue Officer, Buzz Walker. Buzz, how's it going?
Doing quite well. Good to see you all and great to meet you, Jeremy.
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, you're doing some really interesting things in the generative AI space. And, you know, it's one of those topics that, you know, we can talk a lot about other things that are happening in the world, but we kind of want to just dive into it. What is generative AI and what are you doing in this space?
Yeah. Well, generative AI is any kind of machine learning algorithm that produces data as well as analyzing it or describing it. So any kind of algorithm where the purpose is to produce something like an image or a piece of text or a video. And so under the hood, it leverages a lot of the same things that you'd use in classic machine learning, but ultimately the effect and what you're trying to do with it is much different. And so we're focused on that. We've been focused on that for since about starting in 2019, 2020, when GPT-2 and BERT were coming out. We were doing more general innovation consulting and came across these things. And the feeling I would say that we had at that time was kind of like being a farmer with a shovel being shown a tractor for the first time. Because our job as innovation consultants was to come up with ideas. And even at that time, these things were quite good at that. And so we realized that if we didn't want to be driving someone else's tractor, so to speak, that we really had to get good at this. And so at this point, we are very good at it. And we build custom generative AI systems for clients, as well as doing consulting for folks on how to invest into, build with, or integrate generative AI into their organizations, and teach others how to integrate it into their work and into their teams with courses and trainings.
Now look at your client list, and it seems like you're working with some big players. You have, you know, Valvoline, Walmart, United Rentals, Kellogg, Procter & Gamble, Deloitte. You know, how does this all begin when you're working with some major players and you bring up the topic of generative AI and companies are sort of, you know, not even sure what all this entails? Like, how do you begin the conversation and how do companies decide, you know, what works for them and what doesn't work for them?
Well, the conversation is already happening in companies. We certainly don't have to begin the conversation. And I think that you need to help people boil the ocean. People kind of oscillate between hearing, well, it's just stochastic parrots and useless statistics and it can't do anything and it always lies, to it's magic and it's going to fix everything in our organization. And of course, neither of those extremes are true. And depending on where an organization is at, it can be anything from helping them automate something really isolated, like sorting their text messages better or helping them write contracts faster or helping them bring their reports and research to life more dynamically, to more general things about helping them think about what their users and clients will need in terms of use cases around this stuff. And it can be quite unintuitive at times, right? Like, I don't think there was any science fiction futurist or writer or thinker that before 2018 would have ever guessed that AI was going to be really good at poetry but bad at arithmetic. But that's the situation that we're in. And so there aren't a lot of easy maps to previous things that you can use in order to understand it. And when you get down into the details, how to implement it is quite unintuitive sometimes. It also can include things like helping people understand how their teams need to shift. When you have natural language inside of software applications, that affects not only the way that the software is made, but how it expresses to the user. You need to structure your teams differently, because the person closest to the client, like the product manager or even the client themselves, are the ones that know what they need best, and the software engineers often are not. And there are many software engineers who are good writers, but there's many who also aren't. These are in many cases different skill sets. And so you can't in the same way rely on handing off from a set of user stories and a product requirements document to a software engineer and expect to get back what you wanted. You need people who are actually client-facing, who are in the weeds, who understand the kind of language and the kinds of experience that the client or user needs to have ultimately deep in the software engineering process. Now, this breaks down though, right? Because most product managers or most writers don't know how to use Git. And many software engineers don't know the difference between a good summary and a bad summary. Not to pigeonhole either of those groups. And I know there's lots of people that are in the middle here. But traditionally, these were separate domains. And now they aren't. And so you need to restructure your team differently in order to support that differently structured team. You need different kinds of tools, different kinds of observability, different kinds of contribution, different kinds of collaboration. Sometimes these tools exist and sometimes you have to build them. And in your case of certification, there's also a whole suite of skills that people don't know to hire for yet and are still trying to figure out in what is actually a new skill and what's not. We hear a lot about prompt engineering. Do I need to hire prompt engineers now? How do I test if someone is a good prompt engineer? How do I certify someone that they're a good prompt engineer? Is there a difference between someone who does prompt engineering as part of their normal workflow at their desk versus someone that's building prompts that go deep in the level of the application, deep down in the stack? How do I test for these differently? Do I give them my technical review to see if they're good at Python? Or do I give them my qualitative interview to see if they're a good culture fit, or both, or neither? And so all of these things are evolving, and they're right now very particular to different organizations in terms of how they're expressed, and we help people figure that out.
So diving in perhaps a little deeper into that, I find it very fascinating. Are you working on building any courses or training for your clients, or are you guiding, how are you guiding them towards answering some of these questions? When you start looking at the prompt engineering, for marketing, it may be vastly different than for engineering and developing code.
So true. We have online classes that we teach that are more generally lensed. And there are basic principles that we can teach people that will apply across many different use cases. However, we also work inside of organizations to do research and strategy around what might apply in a certain use case, and then build out processes and structures that will apply to that use case that are more customized to a specific setting. So you're right that there are big differences in how the specific processes you use for code versus marketing, for instance, but there's some overall principles that apply really widely, things like few-shot learning, things like chain of thought, things like prompt chaining, that can get people a lot farther faster with just like a few principles to push them.
As you look more broadly out in the marketplace, are you seeing any kind of coalescing around training, or is it just like generative AI, it's a wild, wild west and you've got some of the Udemy or something like that creating a course. You have MIT and Harvard creating courses. You have people like yourself creating courses. So I'll start that. What do you see? And then what would your advice be to people who are looking to upskill in this area?
Yeah, I actually see it. I see it diverging and fracturing more than converging. And you have to be really particular about the kind of course that you take, depending on who you are and what your job is. So, for instance, our course is the top-rated course on Maven, and I think the best course for anyone that wants to go as deep as you can into generative AI without doing math or code. So we're going to teach you how do you do prompt engineering, how does that become an app, what are the different levels of the stack, and then how does this talk to all of your different kinds of data and things? How does this talk to all the other systems in your company? But the idea is not that you get out as a developer. We are hands-on, but you're not going to get out and be able to actually build these things in a production environment. If you want to learn how to code, our class would be completely inappropriate. And so you need to find something like, you know, there's many at this point, but there's some really nice courses from groups like AI Makerspace that are really deep in the weeds of, you know, what are the different libraries involved? What are the different methods for prompt engineering versus RAG versus fine tuning versus LangChain versus DSpy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If your goal is to lead a team to integrate generative AI or to invest into it, that's too deep in the weeds for you. And then there's others that focus on the math and the learning. If your job is to actually use this at your job, you don't need to know the statistics behind backpropagation. And so don't take a class that's going to drag you through that unless you just want to do it recreationally. So I see a lot of divergence in the training space, which I think is a good thing, because as you said, the different applications are quite particular and what you need to know is quite particular. And I think that that will continue as the ecosystem gets more diverse and as these different capabilities diverge as well. Because every day that goes by, we have more and more services and types of services and types of model and companies in the space. And all of it requires different forms of kind of skills and training.
Mm-hmm. And I assume the same goes to the advice as to what to choose. If it's divergent courses, depending on your need, you need to do some investigation that it's appropriate for the end occupation, job, experience that you want to have.
Definitely. The one thing I would say is that no matter what course you're taking, it needs to be hands-on. So our course doesn't involve coding, but we do get people, even if you're the partner at a hedge fund, we get you in no-code tools building things, because there is no way to just communicate this through concepts right now. There are no best practices right now. These have only existed since 2019, 2020, and they've only been what you could call good or close to good since like 2021, 2022 probably is safer. And so anyone who comes along and says, I'm an expert, this is how you do it, is either oversimplifying it for you or lying, because no one's been an expert when something hasn't been around for more than a few years. You need to get people that get hands-on, that can teach you how to start using the things yourselves, because ultimately that's the only way you're really going to learn right now. And so make sure when you're choosing a course or a certification or training that there's a strong hands-on element to it, even if it's not coding.
As the space evolves, I think one of the things that we think about consistently when it comes to certifications is we want to separate just the certifications that are just offered everywhere versus the certifications that actually lead to employment, and certified skills. Do you see that becoming a thing or something that's going to be important in the prompt engineering space? I mean, can we start teaching fundamentals and start certifying people to have the skills to become a prompt engineer? I haven't seen too many courses like that, so it seems like it's open area of opportunity. I don't know.
I think it's a really interesting question, what happens with prompt engineering. Here's my best guess. I think that most consumer applications are not going to require a lot of prompt engineering. And I would include in consumer application things like work software, things that like right now look like analytics dashboards or look like kind of, types of like Excel or things like that. I think a lot of that engineers are going to work really hard behind the hood so that the user can express their intent in simple language and get back what they want. So I don't think you're going to need to certify for that. You're going to keep certifying for, are you good at your job? Do you know what this skill is? But it'll be more fluid to interact with it through natural language. I think where prompt engineering is going to remain important is in the situation of creating software. I think when you're creating software, prompt engineering is going to get more complicated and more important. I think that natural language will be a deep part of every software stack at any level of the stack above like assembly code. I think optimizing those prompts and I think designing those prompts over time will actually look more like engineering. Right now, in the best case scenario, I would call them craft. And in the worst case scenario, I would call them guessing. I say this as someone who does a lot of prompt engineering, and I'll tell you, we're not always in the best case in our work. And I think we're far ahead of other groups. And so I think that over time, it will get more like engineering. You'll have ways of optimizing prompts that aren't just by hand, where you're optimizing prompts in automated ways as well. So I think you'll have prompt. I would call that actual prompt engineering. I think what you'll call the consumer side is just prompting. You won't need to be an engineer. You won't need any special skills. And then I think aside from prompt engineering, you'll also have prompt science, which are people pushing the boundaries of what can you do with natural language models in ways that are more at the fringe and are exploring what are actually like R&D experiments with what are potentials we can draw out of these kind of new objects and artifacts. And I think where you'll see most certifications is right there in the middle with the engineering. And this will be a specific type of person who is a software engineer, or at least knows how software engineering works, that works alongside engineers that are doing more classic machine code and particularly infrastructure, and then using natural language prompts in order to allow the application to express in a certain way. But in a production application, you don't just have one prompt, right? You're not just wrapping a prompt around an API. You're going to have many different prompts that interact under different scenarios, many different models that those prompts apply to. You're going to have retrieval steps. You're going to have all different kinds of steps that interact in some kind of complex graph that then results in a user experience. And so a prompt engineer isn't someone that can make ChatGPT work really well. It's someone that can actually use long chains of different interrelated natural language forks and trees and choices in order to get people a lot of value and experience in natural language at the top level of the application. But this will be the case for every part of the application. You know, as, for instance, user experience and user interfaces become dynamic. Like right now, you go to a website and the website is the same every time, and maybe it tries to pick up some information about who you are from some cookies or something. In 2 years, the website is going to write itself when you go to the URL, and then the code will get thrown out when you leave because it's now becoming essentially, it's not there yet, but like as these deployments around language models get better, the cost of like producing new code and customizing it, you know, drops farther and farther. So it's going to shift a lot of things pretty quickly here. It's pretty exciting.
Definitely exciting, I'm sure. You know, I heard somebody the other day, though, I was having breakfast, and the guy's like, I have only 5 years till retirement. Can they just push this back till after I retire? Because it's too much to grasp right now.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people do think in those terms. They're like, man, this is just so much going on. This is so much to learn. And you have people in different fields. I mean, you think about a company, they have everything from HR to payroll to management to marketing. you know, I'm sure there's not one simple answer to this, but it's like, where do you begin and how do you start training people to make that transition to start integrating this into their daily life?
Right. Well, from the perspective of a company, I think it's really important to identify low risk internal yes zones for people to start experimenting. A lot of companies, you know, say that they need to develop a generative AI policy, and it's usually a big list of no's because they're being risk averse, which is important and the right thing to do. It says, don't put in personally identifiable information, don't put any text in something without reviewing it because it can lie. Be careful using company data in this way and this way. When people look at it and they either say, this looks risky, I'm not going to do it at all, or even worse, they say, okay, I'm going to be using it obviously, but I'm just not going to tell anyone. And so then you get shadow IT, right? And this happens with every new technology innovation, where it happened with social media and all this kind of thing, where you get shadow IT, where people are using it in the organization and there's not observability from leadership because people don't want to get in trouble. The solution for this is to make sure that your policies have clear yes zones along with the no zones. Don't use it in this way. Don't use it in this way. Do use it in this way. Do use it to create this internal monthly report that all the teams have to make and that gets submitted internally and never touches the public. And then tell us how you did it. And when you tell us how you did it, we'll give you an AI champion badge because you're helping the company learn how to use this stuff better. And you'll see over time, the more that you find internal things like that, that are in low risk yes zones for people to learn how to use it, the muscles will build and slowly you'll realize, oh, you know what? I actually think we could do a public facing application around this. and we know enough about it now that that could be low risk. Now, if you want to do public-facing stuff earlier, you can always come to us because we've been doing this for a few years, and we do public-facing stuff with our clients, obviously. And if it goes wrong, then it's our fault. But you have to trust us first. But when you want to build this capacity internally, which you do want to, that's the first step to getting started.
When you start working with some of your clients along these lines, what are the biggest misconceptions that you run into or have to unwind in people's minds before they can really get started?
It's different for every client. I think a big common misconception that people have is that some people think that AI models collect or learn from every prompt that you put into them. And this makes them extremely risk averse about using it in their business. Because of that misconception, they get the impression that every time I submit something into ChatGPT, the model immediately learns it, that the AI is learning on the fly. But that's not actually the case. These models are trained once and then frozen. And if you want to go then change them, you have to deliberately go back and fine tune them. And doing that takes a lot of work and a lot of time, and it won't happen by accident. So if OpenAI or some other company, or I shouldn't mention them specifically, any company can collect your data, what you're putting in, and then use that later. But many companies say that they won't. For instance, OpenAI or Anthropic, they say, if you use our API, we're not going to collect the data and use this to train on it later. Now, maybe you don't trust them, that's fine. But most companies use third-party cloud services. So companies will come along and say, well, we need to build our own AI because we don't want to give our data to a third party. And I say, well, do you use SharePoint? Do you use Google Drive? Great, you already give 100% of the data in your company to another company that you trust to do that. So then go ahead and use Azure. Go ahead and use Google Cloud. You don't need extra privacy just because it's AI. And so that allows people to move farther faster because they realize, oh, I've already thought about cloud privacy for 20 years now. And I've been thinking about how to partner with third-party companies in a safe way for a long time now. And this is just those same things applied. And it's still really important, and you do have to be safe. But it's not more important because it's AI. And so that simple misconception can really hold people back. And teaching them that simple thing can allow them to move forward with a lot more confidence.
You know, as a course content creator and someone that's building certifications and trainings, I'm going to have to ask this question. At some point, are you going to be getting people out there to test on it, just like other people are going to have a certification process? Or do you think that's just not where generative AI is going to be anytime soon, where it's going to be an actual credential that needs to be offered to them?
Is the question, are you going to have a certification for knowing generative AI? Or is the question, are people going to use generative AI to train and certify?
So both are deep questions. But so right now you have a course on Maven, a popular course on generative AI. You know, do you see yourself going down the route of, or do you see the industry going down the route of, you know, we need to have certifications out there, just like Azure has certifications, there's cloud consulting certifications. People need to learn this, get skilled in it, and then take a test to be able to prove their knowledge. Or is that not the future of this generative AI space?
Yeah, I think there will be lots of parts of this that people need certifications for, and that your employer is going to want to know that you know how to do. I think it'll be pretty domain specific. I think if you're working in the gaming industry or in the marketing sphere, your employer is going to want to know that you can produce images and text procedurally. If you're working in marketing, whether you're a writer or a graphic designer, in a couple of years, it's going to be really hard if you're writing things or making images one at a time, and other people are able to produce them 100 or 1,000 at a time at high quality. So the tool, whatever tools you use to do that, and there would be a wide variety of ones that you could use, employers are going to want to know that you know how to do that. And if you're in software engineering, employers are going to want to know that you understand how natural language prompts interact with Python versus how natural language prompts interact with Rust. So I think that there will be lots of different slices of this where certifications and trainings will help you be employable and help employers understand faster what kind of experience people have and the kinds of projects that they can expect to put them on.
One final takeaway message for all the executives out there thinking about generative AI, worried about it, to all the people there that just want to retire and the others that are like, this is too much for me at this point. What's your one piece of advice for everyone out there?
My advice would be to get hands-on with it. If you don't, any time that you would spend reading an article about what people are doing with it or listening to, you know, besides this podcast, of course, listening to ideas on what you should do about it, you'll learn far more if you spend that time playing with the tools, any of them. And I would follow what your personal expertise is. You know, going back to the farming metaphor, if you're not good at farming, you can sit in a tractor all day and the crops are not going to grow. So what these tools are really good for is amplifying the skills that you already have. So if what you're great at is certification and training, then go try and make your training happen using ChatGPT. Go try it out. See what you can come up with. If you're really good at images and graphic design, get into image generation. If you're really good at marketing, then go try and do content marketing with it. Play to your strengths. Start with your expertise and amplifying that and 10xing it and 100xing it, because that's really where you're going to be defensible and where you're going to continue to win. And then if you focus on the thing you're good at that's not AI, then every new AI release is just better for you, because suddenly what you're doing gets faster and cheaper and you can serve your customers better. So I'd say get hands-on as much as you can and focus on what you're already good at. And that's really the place to start.
Jeremy, I really appreciate your time and your insights and all your energy around generative AI.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Great talking with you.
Thanks for the conversation. Yeah, great. Take care. Great chat. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion, where we provide platforms, software, and test development and delivery services for certification programs.